Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy. There are a couple of things that I would do differently. So this takes us to the whole conversation about how we rethink, you know, education and, you know, like redesign it. So
yeah, we can't just crap on it without putting together a
No, I
solution,
think that we you know, and I really, if there are any educators, you know, who are willing to do this, like, I think it would be game changing. And the funny thing is there's literally no college, particularly an elite university, that doesn't have the funds to do this. They it's not a lack of resources. It's just a lack of sort of, it's just a bunch of bureaucracy standing in the way of, you know, people who aren't willing to challenge the status quo, because, you know, the status quo is like, oh, you know, you get to stay in your cushy bullshit job as a provost. You know, and
who would want to give that up, man?
No, it's like $250 to sit in your ass. And, you know, like, I mean, the assistant dean at Pepperdine, I was just like, this guy does nothing. He probably makes $200,000 a year.
Right.
And he comes in and he gives a few speeches to the students. To the best of my knowledge, that guy has literally had zero impact on my life.
Yep.
And he probably saw a lot of money from my tuition.
Way less impact on your life than the teachers that actually taught you.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Unmistakable Creativity Hour. I am here with my best friend, Gareth, and today we're going to talk about a subject that is near and dear to both of our hearts, something that we have alluded to in previous episodes, and that is education redesign and reform. But before we do that, I wanted to give a shout out to a couple of people, to Russell Rankle, who sent me a very nice gift in the mail, you know, which was a pipe. And we'll leave it at that. And then Eric Roman, who sent me some hilarious messages on Instagram. Clearly, I think the audience is beginning to think I'm just this massive stoner after you know, the last few Creativity Hour episodes, based on the gifts I've received and the comments I've received.
Are they wrong?
I would say that I'm a functional stoner. Like my rule, I don't know about you, my rule is no vices until after 5 p.m. Like, it's kind of the always been my set rule is like, the workday ends at 5, and then after that, nothing bad. But funny enough, given sort of some of the challenges I'm going through right now, I've actually been thinking, I'm like, huh, maybe I should just quit everything for a month or two to see if that, you know, does anything. I mean, you've done detoxes, right? Like that, like where everybody says that, like, those things end up being actually surprisingly powerful. I remember I had a friend who when I told her, like, before we planned the Instigator experience, you probably remember this. Like, I literally didn't drink alcohol for 3 months. And she was like, look what you were able to accomplish when you didn't drink for 3 months. And I thought, that's actually a really good point. And it's funny because, like, self-care is like the first thing to go when you're under stress.
It is. The first thing that always drops for me is lifting weights.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, honestly, I feel like I haven't been exercising regularly, and it's kind of probably not a good thing.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I really love about my newfound passion for ice skating, because when you put time on your calendar and you're going to meet a coach for, you know, a set block of time, like, it's like you were when you were doing CrossFit. Remember, like, you don't skip that.
Well, yeah, not only that, because it's expensive. Like, that's one of the other reasons, right?
Cheap, bro.
Yeah, no, CrossFit gyms are like $200 a month. And because you're spending that much, you're incentivized to go. Otherwise, you're just like pissing away money. And
oh, dude, I'm getting on the ice twice a week and it costs me like $60 every time I go because I'm paying for, you know, personal lesson, ice time. Like, it's not a cheap thing to do.
Yeah.
You have to be really devoted.
Well, speaking of things that aren't cheap to do, let's talk about education.
Oh, yeah. We actually have a topic, don't we?
Yeah, let's go. Have a topic. Well, I mean, look, you and I were both children of educators, and we have this sort of very, you know, interesting take on the whole thing because of the fact that even though we were both, you know, children of educators, we challenge a lot of the sort of conventional wisdom about education. You know, your mom was a teacher. My dad's a professor. But, I mean, like, other than the sort of importance of good grades, which were pretty much non-negotiable, you know, I think for both you and I, it was just kind of an expectation. I don't anticipate, your mom, based on what you told me, I don't anticipate that you got like any sort of praise for getting good grades. It was just like, yeah, great, you're doing what you were supposed to do.
I was intrinsically motivated to get good grades.
Yeah.
I was in a competition with myself and with my friends because I ran in a group of people. We're talking high school here.
Yeah.
I ran with a group of people that were pretty darn smart. And so it was like a, what'd you get on the test? Oh, a 95? I got a 97. Like that kind of nerd level. Like that was my crew. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because like we had a guy named Eric Barker here who wrote a book called Barking Up the Wrong Tree. And it's funny because that's why we're recording on Thursday instead of Wednesday today, because I met him for dinner last night. He just happened to be in LA. And so he wrote an article, you can find it on the internet, about why valedictorians don't become CEOs. And, you know, he had all these sort of really counterintuitive things about why everything we know about success is wrong. And he said, it's not like these people don't amount to anything. Of course, they're smart. Like, I mean, all of our friends were valedictorians or just, you know, went on to do pretty impressive things. I mean, your class and mine, like your class was also, it was funny. It was the class between us that was like kind of just full of idiots. That was like the Beavis and Butthead class. Like there really weren't any, there weren't that many smart people in that class for some reason. I don't know what it was. At least in band, at least the band people from that class were just morons, in my opinion.
I mean, maybe it's just a personality thing, and we just didn't mesh with them. But yeah, they always seemed like the odd ones out whenever we would hang out.
Yeah, well, they just seem stupid, in my opinion. But you're being kind.
I'm more diplomatic than you, but
fuck diplomacy. Diplomacy is overrated.
Hey, man. It's only the first glass of wine. Give it
time. Yeah. That's why I'm working on a book that is going to have the least diplomatic title ever. But you know, that's a whole aside. The thing that is so interesting, right, is that you look at this whole idea of intrinsic motivation in school, and Jessica Leahy is a high school teacher, or I think a junior high teacher, and she wrote this book about the gift of failure. And there's a quote in that book that always stayed with me. She said, you know, like we're conditioning kids now to sacrifice the love of learning at the altar of achievement. And that really stayed with me because the funny thing is that you're right. You and I were intrinsically motivated to do well. I don't know if it was because we wanted to compete or like, honestly, I can tell you I wasn't intrinsically motivated to learn. I was intrinsically motivated to get good grades, which is kind of ironic because the reward is an external factor. But I mean, outside of the grades, I mean, like your mom, like what was the sort of conversation about school around your house?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now, with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Oh, with my mom, she never worried about me because she just knew that I was going to do my thing.
Yeah.
I think that she was more worried about my my sister, who's my junior. So I'm the eldest of three.
Yeah.
And my sister's the middle kid. I think she was more worried about my sister doing her stuff, you know, getting through school, not getting through school, but like doing well in life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, that's the funny thing, because my sister was, we were both straight A students in high school, but for me, it just didn't seem to carry on to college. But that's the funny thing about motivation, right? Like, we write off all these kids as sort of lazy and unmotivated. And I don't know that that's entirely true, because again, I'm not close to anybody from the high school we went to. As I said, I could give two shits about that place. Like, literally, if it burned to the ground, I don't think I would feel like, I literally probably would feel nothing. I'd be like, oh, great, there's now a room to build something useful there. I have no affinity for the place. I would care less if it burned to the ground. The only good thing that came from it is that you and I met. And, you know, but the thing is, like, I was trying to think, like, do you know anybody who was a total fuck up in high school who went out and kind of surprised you?
Not a total screw up. Like, I know people who, like, I never really personally thought were going to do all that much. And then they did a little bit.
Is there anybody
who's like,
lot?
Oh, I don't know about a lot. And what's a lot, you know, and also a lot of this is social media based. Like,
yeah, of course. We don't know whether people are bullshitting us. That's a whole other episode. We should actually do an episode on, you know, understanding critical thinking, like practicing critical thinking. Great. Now we have our episode for next week. It's like critical thinking in the age of, you know, information overload.
Because
you're right. Like, we don't see the truth. So one guy that comes to mind, and it's funny because his brother was in your class and I taught him how to play the tuba, was Robert Nagby and Ryan Nagby. Like, Robert.
Oh, yeah.
So it's funny because, like, Robert Nagby was one of these guys, like, you know, names aside, what was interesting about him is he was wicked smart, but he was lazy as shit. So he never really got good grades, but it turned out that he was actually, you know, quite intelligent. I mean, his dad was an attorney. Like, it was kind of shocking when I got to know him. I was like, oh wow, this guy is like way smarter than I anticipated.
Yeah. No, he's a smart guy, for sure. And I think he's in finance somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. See, there you go. I mean, it's kind of like, here's a C student, you know, who's got a job in finance. I can barely add. I probably couldn't even get hired at most finance places. And I was a straight A student, you know? But I think
he was a cool guy.
Yeah.
But I just think in high school, he just didn't care. So there's a difference between like, I don't care to show up because high school is boring AF, you know, let's be honest. For especially for smart people, it's boring, right? You're like understimulated.
Yeah.
And so, there's that whole thing to contend with as well. And this is part of why education is broken, because it caters to the masses and not to, you know, it's not trying to make a solution that solves the problem for everybody. It's trying to make a solution that gets as many people across a certain defined threshold.
Yeah.
The end.
Well, and the unfortunate thing is that, you know, we really can't blame teachers because they're not the ones who are at fault, in my opinion. You know, it's the system.
No, the administrators.
Yeah, the teachers are being forced. Because, like, I've had teachers who are, like, you're hypercritical of education. And I like, you know, I have to tell, you know, I want to say to anybody out there who is listening, who is a teacher, you guys are, honestly, you're doing God's work. Like, none of us would be where we are without you. Like, I can, without a question, say that I would not have accomplished any of what I have without, you know, my ninth grade band director and his influence. Like, I can't think of one person who can point who's accomplished what they have without the influence of a really wonderful teacher. I mean, that honestly, I think it's a great disservice that we pay teachers as poorly as we do. It's ironic, right? Because they're the ones who make it possible for doctors to become doctors, for billionaires to become billionaires. And yet they're the worst compensated people in this entire system, and yet they're probably the most influential. It's kind of an odd paradox. Well, I mean, your mom's a teacher, so you know this, you know?
My mom is surprisingly well-paid.
Yeah.
But, let's get to that. And I don't want to, like, overshare my mom's personal,
We should talk about overall teacher compensation. Like,
we can talk about compensation.
Yeah.
For sure. But before we get to that, I think it's important to stress that this is specifically an American problem. Maybe not specifically, but it's not a problem in all cultures, right? In Asian cultures, they are revered. Teachers are revered. They're paid much better, and they're respected within the community in a way that we don't respect our teachers.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it is about. I think what it has to do with is the American individualism within our you know, personalities as a society. I think that we want to take all the credit when things go right and not pass it along to the people who got us where we are.
Well, so it's funny. There's a term for that. It's called self-serving bias, where you basically think that when something goes right, it's all your fault. You know, you take all the credit. When something goes wrong, it was due to circumstances out of your control.
Right. So we blame the teachers when we don't get the job we want, or we don't start the business we want. But if we do find success, then it's all because of our hard work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, you and I were very, very fortunate that we're, you know, the beneficiaries of both, you know, having parents who are academics. There's also the conversation when it comes to education about privilege. Like, let's be honest, we came from privileged backgrounds. I mean, you saw where we grew up, because I remember even the neighborhood that we grew up in, when I would tell people that my parents bought a house there, which was to me hilarious, because my dad was making 45 grand a year, and they're like, oh, you're rich because you live in that neighborhood. And I'm like,
But some of the guys we went to school with, you know, their parents were making minimum wage.
Which is shocking to me, right? Like, you don't even realize that when you're growing up. You kind of, you know, you're so unaware of that when you're growing up. But, it's interesting that you bring up motivation in particular, because that makes a perfect segue into a clip from our buddy Dan Pink, who had a lot to say about this. Take a listen.
It sort of irritates me when people say, especially about adolescents and high schools, oh, they're not motivated. You know, because, you know, write a book about motivation, people ask about motivation. It's like, oh, what can we do to get these high school students motivated? They're not motivated. And you know, my view is like, oh, well, they think that your incredibly boring and controlling classroom sucks, and I don't blame them. But let me show you where they're motivated. Have you seen them in theater? Have you seen them on the athletic field? Have you seen them in the marching band? Have you seen them in the orchestra? Have you seen them in the school newspaper? Those people are super engaged. Why? What is it about those elements that make them engaged? Well, number one, it is freely chosen. So no one is forcing you to be in the marching band. No one is forcing you to be in the school newspaper. It's your choice. Second, it involves other people. And the thing about marching band, one of the best lessons that one can learn from marching band, I think there are two huge lessons that you learn from marching band. One, practice matters. When you practice, you get better at something. Two, your performance affects other people's performance and their performance affects you. So you got to bring your A game. And so it's those things are collaborative. And the second, I think the third is I think actually really important is that it's real. It's real. It's out there. It's public. It's in the world. It's not this hermetically sealed terrarium kind of exercise that you have where you write an essay for your English teacher and he or she quickly reads it once.
So Gareth, as two former highly motivated, you know, marching band alumni and you yourself being a star of a school musical and having a daughter who is now, you know, on her way to college, what do you make of that? Like, what do you think about that?
Oh, I agree 100%. In my household, I was always required. There was more emphasis given to extracurricular activities than there was to grades. Hmm. In hindsight, I didn't really think of it at the time, but it was always really important that we were involved in something else, not just academics at school. And so, yeah, that's something I tried to pass on to my daughter as well.
That's funny because, like, I don't necessarily know that that was the case in an Indian family. I mean, you know, both my sister and I were in extracurriculars. I always think that my parents probably saw it as a means to an end. It's like, oh, this will help you get into college, so do it, you know. But
yeah, that's what I thought too. That's what I thought. My mom was encouraging me to do it for that reason because, you know, hey, you need as many bullet points on your college, you know, essay or your college resume to get accepted to that school.
Yeah.
And of course, come to find out, like, none of that shit matters.
Well, now it's even like literally, unfortunately, like kids are spending so much time trying to like pad their resumes. It's like 50 AP classes and, you know, you get a college admission scandal that emerges from this.
This, like, might blow your mind, though. Did you know that they actually get letters of recommendation from their teachers in high school that have to write them to the collegiate body that is, evaluating whether or not they're going to take the student? That's a thing now.
I'm pretty sure that we had to get... Did we have to get recommendation letters? I don't remember. I feel like I'm pretty sure, like, a guidance counselor wrote a recommendation, but I feel like high school guidance counselors are more like glorified schedule planners. You know, no offense to anybody who's listening here, if you're one of those, because they don't really guide you on anything, and it's no different in college. You know, like, I don't understand why they call them guidance counselors, because they're really not guiding you on anything.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Who was it that told me that there was a guidance counselor who encouraged them to apply to lesser schools than they wanted to because the chance of them getting into the lesser school was better?
That was probably me.
Was that you?
Yeah.
It would improve the guidance counselor's stats.
Well, she didn't tell me about her stats, but like I can tell you the guidance counselor at North told me that I would wither away at Berkeley.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. These guidance counselors, they care more about padding the stats of the high school.
Yeah.
No offense to any guidance counselors listening, but you know, they're trying to pad the stats of the high school.
Well, if you're a guidance counselor, provide guidance. Don't plan schedules. That's ridiculous. Like, provide actual guidance. Well, yeah.
There's so much to unpack here. There's so much bullshit in the realm of education.
Yeah.
Especially when you're going from high school to college. Mm-hmm. We've got, you know, a ridiculously bloated collegiate cost now due to administrative fees that have little to no value on the overall education.
Like, absolutely. Like Andrew Yang, bullshit. When he was here, we were talking about the rising cost of admission.
Yes.
And he said, you know, largely what is to blame for the cost of rising tuition is administrators. And even my dad has said, he was like, you wouldn't believe the number of bullshit jobs. Like, by the way, what the hell, if anybody listening to this can tell me, please write in. And if you're a provost, no offense, but that sounds like a bullshit job. What the fuck does a provost do at a university? Do you know? Which is hilarious. I mean, you're, you know, maybe they're like a, you know, they came from Gareth's lineage because his last name is Pronovost. So it's like, we could blame Gareth for the provost. Like, what exactly?
I should be an honorary provost.
Yeah, you should. Well, I mean, you don't have to do anything and you make a lot of money. That sounds like a pretty good gig.
I mean, that's exactly why we're paying $100,000 a year to go to B-level schools these days.
We had an assistant dean at my business school. And I remember asking the woman who did my study abroad coordinating. I remember the day we graduated, we had this graduation dinner. And I was like, can you tell me what exactly he does here? And she kind of looked at me and was like, he doesn't do a damn thing, does he? And she's like, no comment. Like, great. Dude. And you know, it's funny because, like, you know, just to mess with a guy, I wish I had done this a bit more aggressively. So when maybe I shared this before, when I was in Brazil, I sent him a postcard of a girl with a thong on, you know, with a picture of a girl in a thong. And when I got back from my study abroad, the first thing I did was went to his office and I was like, hey, did you receive my postcard? And he said, yes. And so did everybody else at the administration. I'm like, cause you know, it has to go through, like it gets to the front desk. So literally everybody sees it and they're just like, damn. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, I think I should have taken that a bit further and maybe just sent him like a stack of Brazilian porn. I feel like I didn't even go as far as I could have with that. But the thing is, man, that guy literally did nothing. And the thing is, like, we were paying, you know, our tuition dollars go to that. Even I was at the Texas A&M Business School giving a talk and they had me on their podcast and I was in their executive office. And I was like, look, you know, one of the issues with all this is that you have an office here where this is like beautiful office. All these people have these really nice individual offices, probably all of them make good money. And guess who pays the cost for that? Your students, you know? And so it's insane. I remember when I went to Berkeley, the tuition was $2,000 a semester. I don't know what
that's
it is now.
Now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, dude, I'm sure it's like 50 grand a year
at a public school.
So like Yeah, I know. It's probably like $17,000, $18,000 a quarter, maybe more.
For the tuition?
Yeah.
That's just tuition, not anything else.
I think I was paying when I graduated UCR in 2012, because I was a late bloomer. I went back to college.
Yeah.
I graduated there in 2012, and I think I was paying like 12 grand a quarter, not including living costs, just for education.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
just for classes.
Wait, 12 grand a quarter? Just for classes?
A quarter.
Wow. Okay, that's
Dude, the amount that it's increased over the last 15 years, it's stunning if you look at the numbers. And that's why, you know, not to get political, but when people are like, student debt, it doesn't, you know, shouldn't be forgiven. I'm like, well, something needs to get fixed.
Yeah, this is one of those things I've always said. I'm like, I'm an Indian person who sucks at math. And even I know that you can only keep lending out money so long without getting it back before, you know, there are systemic consequences. Like we've already seen there was a college. I remember my sister applied to this all girls college called Sweetbriar, and they closed after 100 years.
Wow.
Like a college is 100 years old closed.
What led to the close? Do we know?
Lack of money. I mean, because the thing is, the endowments stopped coming in. It was a private school. So think about it. Like you're saying, like UCR costs $12,000 a semester. Like imagine what tuition is at, you know, an elite Ivy League school, and then forget elite Ivy League schools. The real culprits, the biggest culprits, I think, are these for-profit schools that Betsy DeVos owned, which, you know, personally, I could not believe somebody who has literally ripped off the entire, you know, student population of America was made our Secretary of Education.
Well, that's because you prescribe to alternative facts, Rene.
Yeah.
And if you didn't, then you'd understand.
Oh, okay. Wait, what are the true facts? Like, tell me.
She's the one who said alternative facts, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Never mind.
We're
a political rabbit hole.
But the thing is that, you know, funny enough, it's kind of relevant, right? Because politics definitely have played a big role in education. Yeah. So if you think about it, like when I remember talking to Ramit about this, he's like, no matter how you slice it, this is a political conversation. Because one of the things that happened was Ronald Reagan being elected, privatizing education, like really changed everything.
And don't get me started.
Well, no, the crazy thing is like
UCLA for free.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So the funny thing is that
for free,
it takes us back to that whole conversation about decisions and first and second order consequences. It's like somebody made a decision 30 years ago that generations are going to pay for.
Yeah. No shade to the boomers out there, but listen, y'all got to do the private education or the public education thing for free. If my dad, as a California resident, got to go to UCLA for nothing,
yeah,
you know, except for books and parking. And so you're telling me that I should deserve to pay $40,000 a year to get the same degree that he got in the same public school system 30 years later?
Yeah.
Get fucked.
Well,
there's no logical pedestal that you get to stand on and make that argument.
Yeah, we might have lost a few listeners there, but whatever. Well,
I don't know what to tell you. Sorry.
Well, you have a daughter that's going to college, and I'm guessing a lot of people listening to this do. So
here's the thing.
What's your take on
this? My daughter's going to college, and I'm going to pay for her education because I can afford to do that. So she gets to go to whatever school she wants to.
Yeah.
But as a nation, we should absolutely give options to people who want to get a higher education, get collegiate level, you know, at least a bachelor's degree, where they don't have to go out of pocket hundreds of thousands of dollars, even tens of thousands of dollars. That's absurd.
I like, honestly, like there are times when I honestly think I'm going to die with this debt.
I hear you.
No, I had a friend who told me, you know what he told me? He said, you know how people pay off their student loan debts? When their parents die because they get the life insurance money.
Well, and that's going to be the truth for the majority of our generation.
That is so disgusting.
Well, you know, when you think about it, the boomers are going to pay for it eventually. There you go. The end.
Yeah. I mean, it's just full circle. That makes me cringe, right? Like to think that that's what it's going to take. Like, you know, I don't
it's
want
to. Disgusting. Well, it's disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, to like the idea that like my parents aren't going to see me thrive in my lifetime and like I'm going to get out of the debt because they die. Like that's horrible.
Right.
I mean,
I wish I knew. I wish I knew what to tell you. Other
yeah,
than
no, I mean, I'm reality. I'm particularly like, you know, emotionally charged today because of something that happened that has nothing to do with this, which Gareth knows what I'm talking about. But
and I'm just always grumpy about baby boomers. No offense to any baby boomers out there. Individually, I'm sure you're amazing.
Yeah,
as a group, you're very disappointing.
Yeah. Well, look. Here's the thing. The thing that's interesting though, right, is that this also raises a question of the purpose of education in general. Like, what is the point, you know? And like, we look at K through 12 and I'm kind of like, why do you need 12 years to do half the stuff you do there? Like, you and I probably could have done third, fourth, and fifth grade in about a year. Honestly, most kids are way smarter than we give them credit for. And it's kind of like, it was funny because Eric was like, you guys seem to like really have it out for the 17-year-olds. And it's like, yeah, like I realize we need a weekly 17-year-old knock. And it's just like, you know, most fourth graders are smarter than they think they are. And most 17-year-olds are dumber than they think they are.
And now I'm beating up on old people tonight.
Yeah, so we're just a bunch of
old curmudgeons, apparently.
Well, no. So this is what you call equal opportunity, you know, criticism.
Oh, okay.
It's affirmative action for like critiquing people, you know,
for age.
Yeah, affirmative action for age. Like
affirmative ages.
We're not criticizing any one group. We're equal opportunity critics. You know,
mm-hmm.
Like basically everybody is an idiot in some context or another. Yeah. You know?
Well, that's the truth. Ourselves.
Included.
Definitely included. Yeah.
No question. So that's the thing, right? So like you've got this situation where now you're seeing this system that has been going on. And the bigger issue in my mind is that it is actually not leading to the outcomes it's intended to produce. Like that to me is really where the problem is. And that problem started
a long time ago.
Yeah.
What's the outcome that you think it's supposed to produce? Because I think the outcome you think it's supposed to produce isn't the outcome they actually wanted to produce.
Okay, what do you think the outcome is?
To keep people in line. You have to give people enough education so that they can contribute to society, but not so much education that they overthrow the oligarchy. It's a tightrope. You can't get too smart.
Because then you'll break the system?
Yeah, then you break the system. Which is what you and I are designed to do.
Yeah.
As humans, like we just.
Well,
we
that's the thing, them. Right? It's like, yeah, but then look at the outcomes. If the goal is to basically keep the society in order, look around. Are we really living in a world of order? No. We're living in a world of disarray right now.
Depends who you talk to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it depends. If you talk to the person who has the six-figure job where they sit in their office cubicle and they are able to afford their, you know, $800,000 house in the suburbs, then they're very happy. And they don't want the status quo to change because they feel like they deserve that. And I don't blame them. They've been sitting in a cubicle for 10 years. Shit, that life is awful.
Yeah.
Like,
so they have one thing. Yeah, you might as well have an $800,000 house to look forward to when you come home.
You might as well at that point, you know? And so how do you keep them motivated to keep going to their boring-ass, stale job? Well, you have to... You have to create classes and you have to say, well, you're better than these guys. You think you've got it bad because you go to the thing. But while you're not working a minimum wage job, you're educated. You're the elite.
Okay. And speaking of which, then that raises the question of, okay, this is a debate that is ongoing is like, should everybody even go to college? And I'm pretty sure the answer is no. But what if your daughter told you she didn't want to go to college?
Well, I'd ask her what her plan was.
Yeah.
The short answer to that is that's totally cool with me. So long as she's passionate about doing something, then that's great.
Yeah.
And if she doesn't know what she's passionate about doing, and I know there's a difference between passion and curiosity. I'm not trying to go down that road.
No.
If she has something that she wants to do, then go for it. And, I'm going to help you accomplish whatever you want to do, like support you in whatever way I can as your parent to get to, you know, your desired outcome. But, what would be unacceptable is if she said, I want to sleep in your basement and eat Pop-Tarts all day long and never get a job. I would be like, well, then you're never going to grow outside of this family. You're never going to have your own individual life and your own individual passions.
Yeah.
The only way you're going to get there is by having experiences. So that's a no-fly zone for me. Yeah, but I mean, college alone? Nah.
Yeah, I mean, and that, you know, raises a question of like, what is the purpose of being there? Like, what do you do to maximize your experience of being in college, and how do you get the most out of it? And, you know, I think the other questions that we want to answer here are, what does it look like when you actually redesign education for the future? And for those of you who want to hear our answers to this, make sure you subscribe to the Backstage Pass for the rest of the episode.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolved. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.